This weekend is a holy one for Christians and Jews alike. Tomorrow is Good Friday and the beginning of Passover, the Jewish holiday commemorating the story of Exodus, when the Jews were freed from slavery in Egypt. The Haggadah, the religious text read at Passover, is 3,000 years old. It's been translated more than any Jewish book from ancient times in Europe and the Middle East. To modern times. Two musical examples there of how objects of culture associated with a people, in this case the Jews, gets remade and reinvented down through time and place. So it is with the Haggadah. There's a new American version, edited by Jonathan Safran Foer and translated by Nathan Englander, and just published. And so as the reggae singer Matisyahu explores Jewish themes in his distinctly modern songs, Jonathan Safran Foer and Nathan Englander constructed their new Haggadah as a guide for American Jews of their generation, curious and full of yearning about the roots of their own beliefs. The Haggadah is a book, but it's also the record of a personal and universal mission of memory for each family who sits down to the Seder dinner. And for Jonathan Safran Foer, it's also been a journey. And in our studio yesterday, with book in hand, he took us along.
So my relationship with it, as you said, really was through Jewish education, going to Hebrew school, but primarily through Seders. I've been to 68 Seders in my life, two a year. And the first was always at my parents' house. And we would use a Haggadah that my parents cobbled together from other Haggadahs in the world. Our joke was always, why is this night different from all other nights? Because on this night, copyright doesn't apply. And then the second night was at my grandmother's house, and we would use the infamous Maxwell House Haggadah.
Nathan, is your sense of the Seder a time to think universally about things that have happened down through time, or is it a time to focus much more on our own personal sense of what's going on, our own personal wrath, our own personal hope?
I mean, the point, like any other good story, it better be – I think about it with novels. Like I love The Russians. We often love things that are so distant, and sometimes things are written just for you. So this one I feel like is so personal, so close in that way. But yes, any story that's functioning better be a universal. And I think that's so many of the ideas. Yes, it's about our freedom, but really the very start of the telling, say Olamad, like venture off and learn, where the story starts where we think so much about freedom. And it says, you know, what did Lavan – you know, when Lavan sends Jacob, you know, down there, he says – basically, his, you know, this relative is trying to do to him what not even Pharaoh did, which is to completely destroy the Jews. So the story about Egyptian slavery first starts out saying, yes, Pharaoh wanted to kill all the male sons, but Lavan wanted to kill us all. So it's even it is both always a universal wake up call and a personal, like to clean up the world's house. And very much as it goes with scrubbing away all the breadcrumbs for a year, clean up your own house first.
So given that this is a universal story, and it's amazing in this Holy Week, which coincides with Passover, both for Christians and Jews, you know, the passion of the Christ story gets told again and again and again. And the power of both of these stories, we know every single detail, but every time you hear it and repeat it in whatever ritual you're talking about, it continues to deliver power. I'm wondering, just what was the challenge of even coming at the design of a new Haggadah?
I should say we don't know every detail. If we had known every detail, it actually would have been exhausted by now. The most legendary of all Seders, which is actually the story of which is told in the Haggadah itself, took place in the 2nd century. And it was the five great sages of Jewish antiquity, it said, told the story of the Exodus into the morning and were interrupted only when their student came to say, it's time for morning prayers. And so the question is, what were they doing? Hmm. You know, if they read every word from beginning to end, if they fulfilled every ritualistic obligation, if they sang every song, they still would have been spending almost all of their time doing something else. And I think what they were doing was in a sense proving that statement wrong. They were, you know, dissecting the story. They were arguing over the story. They were trying to find meaning. They were trying to, you know, illuminate the ethics of the morality of the story. But it was important to us to make a beautiful artifact. You know, in addition to making a good, useful, and provocative guidebook, to have a beautiful artifact. David Mamet wrote an extremely provocative essay a couple of decades ago called The Decoration of Jewish Houses, where he asks the question, what is it that modern Jews have in their homes that identifies them as Jews? You know, is it the, I don't know, box set of seasons 1 through 10 of Seinfeld? Is it the Chagall lithograph on the wall? Is it some mezuzah you picked up in Jerusalem? I think a lot of people have a hunger for something they can put out in the open that identifies them in a way that they're proud of and that feels
living. Living.
That feels living. That's right.
But that is the very quote. I mean, that's, you know, it's a wonderful design element, and that's, you know, all been thought about. But that is the quote on the cover. That in every generation, you know, the person telling the story needs to tell it as if he is the one that is leaving Egypt. And I think there's something we interact with stories. You know, we remember things, but this idea of telling a story as if you're living it is so specific to this. And I think that's even the idea of why a new translation. Because I can't tell you when people ask, is this translation? Is it vegan? Is it feminist? Is it LGBT? Is it, you know?
Do people really ask you, is this a vegan translation?
We get asked, I mean, you know, we're,
I love that.
Jonathan wrote Eating Animals. You know, there are questions about, like, what is it? You know, and it's not even about us. It's people bringing their own selves, the thing they want to find in this book. I think the idea is, you know, the agenda behind this is no agenda, but you can't have an absence of agenda. And I think it is to just be a loyal retelling, an absolutely clear translation of what is there. But I think that, you know, why it's called the New American Haggadah, I think is just the English chosen, even if I'm being with, you know, absence of self and just trying, you know, to keep fealty to the text. I think everything takes place in a moment. And I love, you know, Jonathan going to the top of New American Haggadah, because the day it's out, it's already old. Like, I think that's another thing about these books, is just capturing a moment in time, even if you're not in, even if you're intending for timelessness, it will be of the now.
And you're capturing America in the form of the language in your translation, Nathan. But there's also, is there a mission to capture a sense of American practice? Precisely these thoughts that David Mamet, you know, mentioned, that there's a certain feeling of being adrift in the United States, even as we're all successful here in this country.
I think that's probably true, but it was implicit. It wasn't an explicit ambition. You know, I wanted to make a Haggadah in response to my own experiences at Seder tables, in response to what I thought were conversations that never reached their full and really exhilarating potential. So I went to Hebrew school. I was bar mitzvah. I've been to Israel a number of times. But as I started to work on this book, I had to confront really my ignorance, my lack of Jewish literacy. And my grandmother, for example, was an immigrant to the United States, as was my mother. But they were both natives to Judaism. And it's different with my generation, or at least it's different with me. I am, you know, clearly native to America, but an immigrant to my own religion, to my own faith. And so the guidebook has to change, I think, in response to where American Jews are now. That doesn't mean we have to talk about Afghanistan and Iraq, but it might mean that a little more contextualizing, a little more clarity in the narrative, a little more a commentary that speaks to our idioms and concerns will help maintain the modernity of this ancient text.
So what do the elders in your lives say about this project? Do they go, good start, boys, nice work, you'll eventually get there? Or do they want to deliver a plague of frogs onto you? You got something wrong? What's been the reaction?
We've got supportive parents. I know my mom ordered 15 for the family Seder, so I don't think there'll be an absence of these at our tables, that's for sure.
There's no getting there. It's not a competition, and it's not a ladder. You know, it's a spectrum. We weren't trying to make a Haggadah that superseded another one or competed with another one, but that fit a certain kind of user. And who was the user we had in mind? It was, you know, the Seder table in my basement and Nathan's Seder table and his sister's Seder table and my grandmother's Seder table.
Well, that's it. Everyone's form of religiosity is the right form. This rabbi who, you know, I can still hear him screaming at me in my head, but that's, you know.
Sounds pleasant.
Yes, but that was it. He would scream, anyone more religious than me is a fanatic. And I thought that sums up everybody's, you know, everybody's right on point, you know, for themselves.
Well, it's about being able to articulate with clarity your own intent at trying to get somewhere, although not thinking that there is a destination. It's your intent.
But I have to say that was maybe the biggest discovery of this project. Once we took on the project, it was recognizing that we had to really figure out where we were in our heads and commit to it. And it was that commitment to language, just translating a single word for me. I think I could have been frozen with this book for decades, but it was that idea that you need to own your space in this conversation or it doesn't get done.
So Seder number 69 coming up for you, Jonathan?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's the first one in my life that I won't celebrate at my parents' house or my grandparents' house. My brother-in-law just had a child in Israel, so we're going to be going over there. And there's something bittersweet or funny or just Jewish, I guess, about having worked on this project for about 9 years. And it comes out now, and I won't be there, you know, to share it with my family. But the nice thing about Seders is there's always one next year.
Bittersweet, Funny, or Just Jewish? Sounds like a good book title, Jonathan.
I think it's going to be the tombstone engraving when I kick it.
Jonathan Safran Foer, editor of the New American Haggadah, and Nathan Englander, translator of the New American Haggadah. Safe travels, and next year in Jerusalem, right?
Exactly.
Or somewhere.
Thanks so much for having us.
That got us inspired to ask you, is there a classic story or maybe a book that you think needs an update? What would you change? One listener says Cinderella could do with some more stepmother drama, some real seduction, and steamy romance. Lol. 8778-MY-TAKE. I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry. Happy Passover and Easter for everyone. This is The Takeaway.